Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, and I'm not Bill Buckmaster. Bill is away on vacation with his beautiful wife, Anne, and they're islands in the Atlantic somewhere off the coast of Spain, having a great time. And this is Shelley Fishman, and I'm here to do a little bit something different today. I have two guests in the studio with me. Mark Blakeman is the president and CEO of the Tucson Symphony Orchestra, and James Reel is the president of Arizona Friends of Chamber Music and the classical music director at KUAT. Just got off the air and rushed down here to be with us today. And he's also executive director of the Southern Arizona Symphony Orchestra. So we're going to talk about music today, the business of music, how to make music, how to run a music business in a world-class environment. But before we do, because it's Tuesday and because Monday giveth and Tuesday taketh away, we're going to talk about the stock market just a tiny bit. We're down about 193 points. We were up about 200 and something points yesterday. It's Tuesday, and therefore it's not good. So let's forget about the stock market for a second, and let's just talk about a brief article that is in the current edition of Time magazine. And it's called "The Markets Are Choking Our Economy, How to Save It." It's by Rana Faruhar, who has been a long-term, almost 30 years, writing in financial columns for major magazines. And it is in the current issue of Time. I'm not going to describe it for you except to say I read it with great fascination. It's kind of a compilation of her current book, which is called Makers and Takers. And if you have any interest in reading about the economy, what's going right, what's going wrong, and some really specific ideas for how to fix some of the problems, I would recommend starting with the article, and then if you like the article, go get the book. Okay, to another business other than the stock market and investing, let's talk a little bit about music. Mark Blakeman, again, president and CEO of the Tucson Symphony Orchestra. And Mark shared with me earlier, before the show started, that he started in the business as a professional musician. He was an orchestra player and played the trumpet. But then went and got on the business side of things, actually has several degrees in business management of musical organizations. He also was the executive producer or involved in over 7 Grammy Awards for recordings. So this is something that Mr. Blakeman doesn't do as a sideline. This is something that Mark does as a profession. And then anybody who's spent any time here in Tucson and listened to music, especially classical music, knows the name James Reel. James is, an announcer. He's the music director for classical music at KUAT and Arizona Public Media. But some things I didn't know, he's also the executive director of the Southern Arizona Symphony Orchestra, which recently had several performances here in the Tucson area. With a friend of mine as a conductor, Linus Lerner.
Yes.
And you're also president of the Arizona Friends of Chamber Music, something that occupies many of my Sunday afternoons. So we have two real experts with us. I would just note that the Buckmaster Live line is live, and if you have a question and would like to join the discussion briefly, please give us a call at 790-2040. So let's kind of get right to it. And let me start with you, Mark, if I might. First of all, it's been a year and a half, but welcome to Tucson and
Thank you. Welcome to
the Tucson Symphony. So how do the performing arts affect the attractiveness of Tucson as both kind of a tourist organization, a tourist destination, and a place for businesses and individuals to relocate?
Well, I think I've certainly heard over the years from different city leaders and leaders of chambers of commerce that arts and culture, depth of a community is a significant factor, especially for businesses who are looking to relocate or potentially expand into a particular market. And there's economic impact that's associated with the arts and culture industry. So it does help our local economy. But I think for businesses and individuals that are looking to relocate to Tucson or anywhere else, it's really a question of, I think, quality of life. and a robust arts and culture community. It says so much about a city and what a city values and what kind of depth a community has and what kinds of experiences that you might expect to find in a community where art and culture plays an important role there.
Right. And I'm not limiting the question necessarily to classical music, but certainly that's the expertise we have with us today. And I'm going to throw this to you, James. One of the things that I noticed coming from New York, which of course is very much a music town, I always seem to be the youngest person in the audience. Now, I've been here for 25 years, so I'm no longer the youngest person in the audience. But the audience for classical music seems to be overwhelmingly aged.
It's true, but there has been research going back into surveys taken in the 40s and 50s that it's always been more or less true. It used to be that younger people were busy, they were raising families, they were having jobs, they didn't have time for all this art stuff. Maybe they hadn't developed the interest yet, but as their lives opened up a little bit, they started going to concerts, they started taking their kids to the ballet. And it was only as they entered middle age that they really had the time and perhaps the money to support this habit. It becomes an addiction.
I see. So how do you reach out to young people and get them interested? How do you make, well, for want of a better term, you know, classical stuff that is very much oriented to composers who lived 200 or 150 years ago? How do you make that relevant today?
Well, I think, we probably are starting to take a broader approach to what we do musically and referring to it more as symphonic music and less specifically as classical music. And I think that the important shift there is about making it relevant, because there's a lot of symphonic music that can be an entry point for maybe a non-traditional ticket buyer. But you have to program in a way that makes it appealing to them. You meet them where they are musically. And I think that what you program really determines who comes through the door.
Can you? I know that you've done some accompanying of movies with the schools.
We have.
You've done some pops concerts and that kind of thing. Give us some specific examples so we don't scare everybody away.
Well, we've been tracking by concert how many new accounts are created. So we have a very clear picture of, based on the type of programming that we offer, how many new people come through the door. And right now, it's mostly through what I would call special programs, not necessarily part of a series, not part of the classic series or a masterwork series, and in some cases, not necessarily part of the pop series. But in March, we did a presentation, The Music of Led Zeppelin, with full symphony orchestra. And we had a wonderfully diverse, younger audience. We actually saw a couple of very distinct age groups. We saw some people in their young 20s there with their baby boomer parents who grew up on classic rock. And I think, you know, what we're trying to do as an organization is to stay true to the really great classical music that we play, but to diversify our portfolio of concert offerings so that we can have a broader range of programs. And you mentioned some of the concerts that we've done recently with visual elements. We did a great program last November, Pixar in Concert. Mm-hmm. It had excerpts of 13 different Pixar films, and the orchestra plays the music live. It's perfectly synchronized with the film, which is actually very difficult to do. Everybody's on a click track, and you have to be incredibly precise to do that. We presented Fantasia a year ago, and we see when we present these things that in the data, that new people are coming through the door. They're not the traditional buyers, and certainly we don't do this in a way to alienate ourselves from the core audience that we have, but to create entry points for other types of customers, patrons, and we also started a family series this year.
James Reel, you know, I would imagine that this is a harder problem to solve in a chamber music venue.
It is, because chamber music, well, you know, with the video games and film soundtracks, there are some chamber music elements to some of them, but it's hard for us hiring outside ensembles to get somebody to buy into that. So we have to do more in the way of marketing, and we are trying to trick some people into coming to a classical
trick
music.
Trick people? Oh,
good
yeah,
job.
We're working. I can't say too much about this yet because a lot is still up in the air, but we're working on a concert for the weekend immediately before Halloween, bringing in a great, young, attractive violinist from Texas who has a program of classical Halloween music, Danse Macabre, the Devil's Trill Sonata, that sort of thing. And we figure by setting up a Halloween event in a special place that's not our usual theater, Leo Rich downtown, but going into a venue that I'm working on that hasn't been used in decades, literally,
wow,
that lots of people are curious about, and setting this up as a Halloween show, not a classical music concert, we might be able to trick some people into being curious and coming out to it.
Interesting. So,
I was just going to say, I think that for non-traditional classical buyers, there's a lot of perceived barriers that really don't exist. The tickets are very expensive. You have to, you know, wear formal attire.
Yeah, people are so
you
hung up on
you
the
have
dress.
To, you have to arrive in a limousine, all of these things. And I like what James is doing because I think putting the music in maybe an unexpected venue, you know, creates a different kind of experience. And I think that breaks down barriers for people, and I think that's a great way to reach out to the community.
That's great input. I'm here. This is Shelley Fishman. I'm sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. I'm here with Mark Blakeman and James Reel, and we're talking about classical music and the business of classical music. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about prima donnas. We're going to talk a little bit about how do you hire world-class people, and then when you do, how do you manage them? And I'd just like to say this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. Coming up over the Memorial Day weekend, it's the 21st Silver City Blues and Bikes Festival. For a complete listing of the many things to do, visit, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's take a break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, 5 kids, 2 grandchildren, and I'm afraid I live in a place where some of those scorpions get in the house, and I'm here to report one of the smartest calls I ever made was to my friend Shelby Hawkins at 5-Star Termite and Pest Control. Guess what? The only scorpion the Lehmans ever see is a dead one. Call.
We're 5-Star Pest Control, and we know what bugs you.
Local Tucson business, American Openings, is pleased to be a sponsor of Gospel Rescue Mission. They're on a mission to restore lives that are afflicted by homelessness, hopelessness, and addiction. Each day, the Gospel Rescue Mission in Tucson houses, feeds, and ministers to hundreds of men, women, and children. Gospel Rescue Mission, where homelessness ends and lives are restored. You can learn more at grmtucson.com. American Openings is proud to support Gospel Rescue Mission.
This is Bill Buckmaster with some exciting news. You could win a $1,000 or a $500 travel voucher to one of 16 nonstop destinations from Tucson International Airport in the Travel Smart with TUS contest. Register for free through Tucson International Airport's Facebook or Twitter pages, or go to the website TravelSmartTUS.com. Good luck. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
And we're back. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here and KVOI, and I'm with Mark Blakeman, the president and CEO of Tucson Symphony, and James Reel, the music director at KUAT and the executive director of the Southern Arizona Symphony. And when we cut for the break, James was talking about some special Halloween music, and we couldn't resist the music that we just led in with. So that's if anybody would like to call and tell us what that music was, you know, you'll get a call out on the air.
That'd yeah, we can figure it out.
Yeah, we can figure it out. No, yes, we can. So we were talking about reaching out to world-class musicians to become soloists here in any of our, you know, concerts and our venues to give Tucson a chance to hear what they do live. And I'm going to switch to you, Mark, because you've just done it, not just for a soloist, but for a music director. And after, what was Mr. Hansen here for, what, 15 years?
19 years.
We have a new music director. Would you tell us a little bit about what's that like?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, when looking at the opportunity for me to come to Tucson and to take this position with the Tucson Symphony Orchestra, the fact that the organization was going through a music director search actually played a really significant role in my decision to come here. Having gone through a music director search with my last orchestra, I know if you do it properly, what it can do for an organization. It really can help to raise the profile of that organization. And it's not replacing one conductor with another. It's really taking all of the great things that the last music director did and then building on top of that. And I think each music director that comes along brings their own skills and expertise, and it just helps create a really well-rounded orchestra over a period of time. And so our new music director is a gentleman named Jose Luis Gomez. He's Venezuelan born. He's of Spanish descent and lives in the Canary Islands, actually, off the coast of Spain.
Tough to take.
It's a hard life. He's a wonderfully talented young musician. And in 2010, he won the George Schulte International Conducting Prize, which kind of really sparked his career very quickly after that, he took an assistant conducting position with the Frankfurt Radio Orchestra and has been mentored by another music director named Paavo Järvi for a number of years. And we're just really delighted. His chemistry with the orchestra is really fantastic, and it's something that as you go through and you evaluate candidates and you see them work with the orchestra, we were fortunate to have a lot of very talented conductors come through and work with the TSO over about a 2.5 year period. But you really are looking for not only a great musician and a conductor of great technical ability, but you're really looking for someone that has the right kind of chemistry with the orchestra, and it can't be faked.
It really cannot
be faked. And I think it was pretty instantaneous upon his first appearance with the orchestra.
James, let's have this dialogue a little bit here. How do you tell chemistry? I mean, chemistry. How can you tell when that chemistry exists? Do players kind of come up to you afterwards and say, oh, he's a keeper?
Sometimes that happens, but it's always easy when you're the guest and everybody's being nice. It's the day-to-day relationship when everything changes, but it has to do with a balance between the man or woman on the podium being demanding enough to draw out the best from the musicians, but also being respectful of the musicians, and the other way around, too. There are orchestras, like the London Symphony Orchestra was notorious for decades for being very hard on conductors, even good ones. They just made life miserable for them. But I think those days are mostly over. Conductors aren't the martinets they used to be, and it's more of a collaborative process now.
I think orchestra musicians, where I see it the most is when I sense that the players really just want to do the very best that they can for that person that's on the podium. I mean, they have some sense of inspiration for what this person's trying to do musically, mm-hmm. and it is a collaboration, but they really want to deliver because they want to achieve the artistic vision that person has set.
So when you're evaluating a conductor for a job like that, how many concerts do they get with the orchestra to kind of give you the sense of that chemistry?
Yeah, that's one of the challenges of going through a search like that, because of how the timeline that orchestras have for planning. So we're currently planning all the way through May of 2018 currently. So when you see a conductor who you really like and you say, okay, we want to have them back, if you haven't engaged them already, there's a chance that they're going to be booked up for the next year. So that's one of the challenges, and that's why these searches, on average, take about 2 to 3 years. But mm-hmm. James's comment earlier about kind of guest conductors, they're on their best behavior, and a lot of times when you see a new conductor, you sometimes get their very best program. You get the one that they know inside and out. They know where all the problem spots are. They go right to it. They fix it. They look like a genius.
There was a concert with the Rock 3. I mean, he nailed it. Just nailed it.
Having
concert.
Them back a second time and a third time is really critical, because I think you learn a lot more about them after the first visit.
Okay. So we have a question here from Ingrid having to do with contracts and how you structure a contract with, well, let's first of all start with a soloist, somebody you're bringing in for chamber music.
Okay, well, for the Arizona Friends of Chamber Music, they are contracted to come in on a certain date to play a certain repertory that they've agreed to in advance, so we can market it, let people know what's going on, print the correct information on the program, and they're coming in for a certain fee that's paid at a certain time. And it's pretty straightforward. There aren't usually a lot of writers about jelly beans and the green room and things like that. You know, sometimes with the major celebrities in classical music, they get kind of fussy. But my experience is that most of the people on the road these days are ordinary people who are just extraordinarily talented.
And with a longer-term contract, like the contract you would have to sign for a music director?
The form of the contract can vary depending on the size of the orchestra and who this person is that you're hiring and what the institution is looking for. Are they looking for somebody who's going to conduct every program? Are they looking for somebody who's going to largely conduct your classical programs and somebody else is going to be doing education concerts and pops concerts and things of that nature. The thing to remember is that for a music director, it's more than conducting. There's a lot of administrative responsibility that has to go into that contract. So the contract form that I've seen the most often pretty clearly breaks those two things into pieces, so that there's language that specifically addresses the fact that the music director is responsible for the artistic quality of the institution, that they're responsible for adjudicating the audition process, for addressing personnel issues, to address probation and tenure issues with orchestras, and that they're there to shape the artistic vision and do artistic planning. So a lot of administrative parts to the work in addition to what I would call podium time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I see contracts for music directors that break those into two pieces, and the administrative work is something that they're going to do off and on for the whole term of their contract. But the way that you approach their podium time may be a little bit different. It may be based on a certain number of weeks that they're going to come work with your orchestra.
Okay. Quickly, before we take a break, right now, a major music organization in New York, the Metropolitan Opera, is looking for a new music director. The press seems to be very involved in this kind of decision process. Each, you know, the music reviewers has their own kind of favorite. Does any of that kind of outside influence work here in a smaller city like Tucson?
Well, you know, I used to be part of the press.
Yes,
I was the classical music critic at the Arizona Daily Star back in the late 80s and the 90s. And I seriously doubted my own influence and authority, although I was told by marketing people at the Tucson Symphony when there was a positive review in the morning, more tickets would be sold that night. So maybe there's some relationship, maybe not, but I don't think I could ever have influenced the selection of George Hanson when he was under consideration.
Certainly what you want is you want your new music director to be well received by the community, and the media is a piece of that, but certainly, you know, the way that audiences responded to different candidates did play a factor, and we evaluated those things as we went along.
Interesting insight. When we come back, we're going to talk about recordings and how they play a role in what you guys do. I just need to comment that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Green Things, the place for all things green in Tucson. Green Things has all your plants, pottery, and gardening supplies on a beautiful 13-acre location at 3384 East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River. Check out their website, greenthingsarizona.com. We'll take a break and come back right afterwards.
The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective, featuring regional, national, and international news, local opinion, and views from top national columnists, business and technology news, auto reviews, books, and the box office, plus sports and a look back at the Old West. The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Fishman filling in for Bill Buckmaster in studio with Mark Blakeman, the president and CEO of the Tucson Symphony, and James Reel, the executive director of the Southern Arizona Symphony Orchestra, plus a whole bunch of other things that James does. The live line is 790-2040, and if you have a clue as to what that lead-in music was and why we might have used it, please give us a call, and we'll give you a call out on the air. So just before we broke, we were talking about what it takes to really make the symphony orchestra a part of the community, and I think part of that is recording what you do and marketing those recordings in a bigger venue than just, say, the community in which you're playing. Let's start with you, James, at the Chamber Music, Friends of Chamber Music. You've been recording stuff forever, and now at the Southern Arizona Symphony, you're doing it as well.
Right. Well, we record our concerts at the Arizona Friends of Chamber Music, which is very important because we commission about 3 new works a year, and we always put those commissioned works up on our website for people to stream, because you hear something once and it can go right over your head, or you might not like it, but if you have repeated exposure to it, you might begin to understand it better. So we're very involved in the online presentation of what we've done in the past in our concerts. And we also issue 1 or 2 CDs every year based on the music in our Winter Chamber Music Festival, which tends to be more unusual music that you can't get just anywhere. And those sell okay over time. It takes a long time to move those things. With the Southern Arizona Symphony Orchestra, we've recorded material for 2 CDs now, which is twice as many as the Tucson Symphony.
Just wait.
We put out a CD a couple of years ago of pieces by Tucson composers. We performed them all in concert over the course of a year or two, and then went into the studio, in effect, and recorded them nice and neatly. And that's a self-produced, self-issued CD. We just finished a CD of two viola concertos by living American composers, Amanda Harberg and somebody I can't remember right now. And those are going to be coming out in future months. We've been in discussion with an international label for release on that. And remember, this is a community orchestra we're talking about. It's a lot easier for us because those musicians don't get paid for what they do. As opposed to the Tucson Symphony, where there are payments for just about everything. And so we have the opportunity to make these recordings by paying for the venues, paying for the recording engineer, the editing and the pressing and all that, but we don't have those high musicians' costs.
So the business models are a little bit different. I've heard that Maestro Gomez is very enthusiastic about doing recordings with the Tucson Symphony.
He's very interested in doing recordings, and I think my previous experience in doing a number of recordings probably plays a factor in that. He's already done a number of recording projects. In fact, I was in early April, I was with him in Denver. He was working with the Colorado Symphony, and they recorded a new banjo concerto with Bela Fleck.
Banjo concerto.
Bela Fleck. So he's already done some projects, but I'm a strong advocate of recording. It's not a revenue stream for professional orchestras. I think that it probably was decades ago. But the reality is that classical recordings generally don't sell enough units to cover the costs associated with doing it. And I left an orchestra that was very active as a recording orchestra, and we did it for other reasons, and I think that had kind of a trickle-down effect. It did affect us positively from a financial standpoint, but it was really about building and developing an artistic brand and an artistic identity. It allows you to reach an audience that goes much further beyond the borders of your own community. And I was regularly received emails from across the country and got reviews in every language of recordings that were being issued. And I also think it's very good for the orchestra artistically. When you record something and it's going to live in perpetuity, you stretch yourself artistically. And I think it's a great tool for helping elevate the music making of the ensemble.
Now, in the case where you've decided to make a commercially releasable recording, are you going to do it live in a live concert, a series of live concerts, and then edit out the blips? Or are you going to bring the orchestra into a studio and do it under more controlled circumstances? And I'll throw that question to both of you.
I've done a lot of both. Most orchestras these days are doing live recordings.
Sure.
The cost structure is a little bit lower. There's also a certain energy level that mm-hmm. you get with a live performance. Some people think that maybe studio recording for classical music is a little sterile. But we basically capture multiple live performances, and then you do a patch session. After the last performance, your producer's been tracking all the spots where you haven't gotten it just right. And in that patch session, you sit down after the audience has cleared the hall, and you capture just those spots, and then it all gets pieced together.
Yeah, for the Arizona Friends of Chamber Music, it works like that. The one performance is recorded, and usually what winds up online or on the CD is that one live performance, maybe with an emergency patch if absolutely necessary, but we rarely have to do that. For the Southern Arizona Symphony Orchestra, which is a community orchestra, which means most of them are amateurs, there are some music teachers in it, there are some retired professionals in it, but it's people from all walks of life. It's a little bit dangerous to think you can give a live concert and have a CD-ready performance there. Mm-hmm. So for that, we do go out into a corner and all by ourselves and make those recordings. However, we do videotape all of our concert performances, and those we use on YouTube. We've got our own YouTube channel, so selected movements, selected unusual pieces, we have out there for anybody in the world to see.
That's really interesting. I want to just get back to something, because the whole idea of bringing world-class musicians into a city like Tucson, strikes me as kind of an interesting prospect. When you bring in a world-famous violinist or a pianist, how does that work? I mean, how do you reserve that person's time and contract for them? Quite frankly, why would they come to a venue like Tucson when they're probably in demand in, places, first tier cities all over the world?
Well, I think there's I think even regional orchestras are an attractive opportunity for artists. For us, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we plan about 2 years in advance. So it all starts with checking an artist's availability and potentially putting a hold on their calendar for a particular week that you would like to consider having them come in. And they all have management and agent representation. So you're working through a third party and they're managing their very complicated, intricate calendars, trying to fit in all of these engagements. Routing becomes an issue sometimes. You know, can they do a cluster of performances on the East Coast before they fly to Europe or fly to the West Coast? Those kinds of things. But I think that artists, true artists, they want to share their art and they want to do it all over the world, not just in major cities. They know that there are people who appreciate and enjoy what it is that they do all over the world.
James, you bring in some of the best chamber music ensembles in the entire galaxy during the course of your Winter Chamber Music Festival. How do you get that done?
It's not that hard, really. And in September, we are going to start deciding on the ensembles that we want for the regular season, not the festival necessarily, because that takes more planning. But for the regular season, we'll decide if there are groups like the Emerson Quartet, the Pacifica Quartet we want for the following season. We lock those groups in. By January, February, we pretty much know what they're going to play. So it's a long, ongoing process that begins a year ahead. For the festival, that takes more work because there are more moving parts. And I'm going to tell you a secret that I probably should not reveal. For the 2000...
It's just here, just us.
Yeah, just us. For the 2017 festival, we determined over the weekend that there was a little bit of a discrepancy between the dates we'd booked the hall and the dates we'd engaged the artists for.
Oh, dear.
And so there's been...
My worst nightmare.
Yes, there's been some scurrying over the weekend, and it looks like we can come through. Maybe we'll have to lose a couple of artists along the way because they do set up their schedules well in advance. They got lots of places to go.
Sure. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about war stories. And I don't like that piano. Get me another one. Or stuff like that. I should mention that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Janos Wilder's Carriage House, Event Space and Cooking School, located at 146 East Broadway in downtown Tucson in a lovingly restored 100-year-old building. To visit the Carriage House, visit carriagehousetucson.com for the full listing of upcoming events. And when we come back, let's just hear a little bit about the fun parts of your job dealing with people who may not be so easy to deal with all the time.
You're talking about me, right?
Yeah, of course, and me.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. And with almost 60 flights a day taking off from Tucson International Airport nonstop to San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, San Francisco, Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, and easy one-stop connections to hundreds of destinations around the world, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across Pima County. More than 730 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. Thanks to our partners in the public for collaboration, participation, and support of the RTA plan. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to our communities, the RTA truly is making a difference. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Every year, eager travelers journey to Europe to experience the Yuletide season at its very best. With the glittering backdrop of winter white hilltops and extravagantly decorated cities, get swept up in the enchantment that's in the air. Let's not forget the most magical part of all, Europe's famous Christmas markets, renowned for their festive atmosphere, great food and drink, and handcrafted gifts. Experience the magic of the holidays aboard an Amal Waterways river cruise. Call Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Christmas market cruise and save up to 40%. Bon Voyage Travel, 797-1110.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
We're back. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here with Mark Blakeman and with James Real talking about the making of music and the business of making music. And we're going to take the last couple of minutes and talk about some war stories. When you're dealing with musicians, when you're dealing with people who have spent their entire lives being at the center of attention, how is that to work with? And are there some stories you'd like to tell us, even if you don't necessarily mention the name, about some prima donna-ish kind of stuff that happened and that gave you sleepless nights. Let's start with you, James.
All right. First, I've got to say I don't encounter that kind of behavior very often at all. Mm-hmm. But there have been a couple occasions back in the 1980s, and I'll tell you who this was because he's been dead for a while. fabulous Spanish guitarist named Narciso Yepes came to town for the Arizona Friends of Chamber Music with a chamber orchestra. So the chamber orchestra was going to play its thing, and Yepes was going to play a couple of concertos with them. Well, back then, all of the concerts were being recorded for future broadcast on the local radio. And we got permissions ahead of time, and everything was fine, but they showed up, and someone had forgotten that Yepes was hired by different management from the chamber orchestra. So we had authorization from the chamber orchestra, but not from Narciso Yepes. And so there was this huge crisis. He went out for the sound check before the concert, saw the microphones there, and went stalking off back to the green room. And so when I got there, they were worried. They begged me to come and do something because he was refusing to play unless the microphones were taken down. So I went into the room where the orchestra was warming up, and there he was at the far end of the room in a large chair on a platform. So here was the king on his throne, noodling on his guitar, waiting for the audience to approach and make its request. And he was very cold and insistent, and it took a bit of groveling, but he needed to be shown the respect and the appreciation. And he said, "Okay, give me the thing to sign later and we'll do it. But it's a little bit of finessing and massaging that's required.
And you've never forgotten it?
Never.
Mark?
You know, I've worked with a lot of artists, and I fortunately haven't had too many issues. I think a lot of times food, artists and food becomes an issue. Certainly if a contract has a catering writer that's more than a page, then I know I'm starting to get into some trouble. I worked with Pavarotti many years ago, mm-hmm. and he was staying at the Lowe's Vanderbilt Plaza Hotel, and he wanted one of every dessert taken up to his suite every day. One of the first artists that I worked with when I first started was Itzhak Perlman, who's a really lovely person.
Man, yeah.
But I have since discovered that he kind of likes to test the newbies in orchestra management. I actually just learned this sitting around dinner with a bunch of orchestra managers, and we all found out that we had Perlman stories. but I worked with Itzhak. One of my first concerts is about 1999. A really, really sweet man. He came and played the opening gala with our orchestra, and I had been shadowing him. At the time, my job was care and feeding of guest artists. So I managed their itineraries and ground transportation and all those kinds of things. So I went to the hotel to pick him up, to take him to the airport so he could fly back to New York. And, of course, he's wheelchair-bound or walks with crutches. And so I went up to his room, I knocked on his door, and I said, "Mr. Perlman, I'm here to take you to the airport." And he opened the door, and he said, he started kind of patting his chest pocket, and he said, "You know, I've actually lost a large sum of money." And I was so green. I thought he'd actually lost some money. And I was like, "Well, oh my God, we should tell the hotel management, you know, what happened? When did you lose it?" I walked in. I'm very concerned about all of this. He says, "Well, maybe it just fell out of my pocket." So he takes his crutch and he lifts up the skirt on the bed, and I'm crawling around on my hands and knees. I'm looking under all the furniture, you know, all this kind of stuff. Turns out he wanted to get paid. He wanted his check. And we had instructions from his management. We had sent the check in to his management, but I guess he expected that he was going to get paid personally. Yeah. I didn't have a check to get him, but he never let on to that's what it was. You know, I think that maybe he was testing me a little bit, but I just found it years later. It was kind of funny to look back on that and think, well, I was crawling around on Itzhak's, you know, hotel room floor looking for money that wasn't there. So,
what about artistic differences between the conductor and the soloist? There's a famous story of Glenn Gould and Leonard Bernstein not agreeing on the tempo that should be used, and I think it was the Brahms.
Yeah, well, that's a very famous story. But what people forget is that Bernstein went along with his tempo, and then if you listen to
a later recording,
if you listen to Bernstein's later recording from 20 years later, it's the same tempo with a different soloist. So, yeah, those are great stories, but sometimes they're not as dramatic as you think.
Okay. Do they occur? Have you had any experience with those kinds of... I know that they don't get a lot of rehearsal. I mean, the logistics of orchestras don't allow for a lot of rehearsal necessarily. If a conductor and a soloist haven't worked together before, what's the process? How do they get together on something?
Typically, in advance of the first rehearsal, there would be a meeting between the conductor and the guest artist. So they would sit down with a score, and they'd talk about tempi, they'd talk about problem spots. You know, the artist would say, "Here's what I'd like to do here." And I think most conductors want to be good accompanists, so I think they tend to often defer to the artist. And I've never really seen a lot of big problems with that. I know of some other orchestras that have actually, in the middle of rehearsals, released an artist and brought somebody else in. It doesn't happen very often, and I've never experienced it. You know, I think most artists, conductors see this as a collaboration, and they want to find a way to meet one another artistically, because at the end of the day, it's all about just providing the best music possible for the audience.
Yeah, when I've seen conflict, it's not usually between the guest artists and the locals. It's between the members of a long-standing string quartet. It's internal conflicts that have been going on for years, and they just growl at each other. But they're perfectly nice to everybody on the local staff.
Well, you make it sound absolutely easy, like anybody could do it. I don't think so. I think that this takes a special talent to be able to put together all the pieces. We have about a minute left, and I'd just like to talk about the venues for a second. Without kind of, yeah, I know, where our orchestra performs and where our chamber music ensembles perform is not necessarily either the most attractive or necessarily acoustically the best places in the world. How do we fix that? How do we deal with those kinds of issues so that both the artists are happy with what's going on, but also the audiences are?
Well, sometimes you can do some acoustical treatment, but that's not a major fix. Leo Rich, where we have the chamber ensembles, is a nice fan shape. The audience feels close to the stage, but it's very, very dry. It was built for Arizona Theater Company, so there's no reverberation. And the musicians tell me they find themselves playing faster and faster because there's no sound coming back.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the venue plays such an important role in the experience that they have. And it's something that I think we need to focus our attention on because I think we can do better in Tucson.
I think so, too. I think it's important to the audience experience as well. I would like to thank Mark Blakeman. I'd like to thank James Reel. This has been a fun experience for me. We could have used another hour, of course. We don't have another hour, but thanks again, guys, and good luck with your upcoming seasons.
Thank you.
It's just a tremendous city to listen to music.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks for having me on.